Well, let's start out with what was clearly the biggest story of the final night, and that was the Wilmington School redistricting efforts. We heard last segment, lawmakers did pass bills backing WEAC's efforts, but it might be a stretch to call it support. In the end, funding really proved to be just too high of a hurdle for them to get over, and it seems that no one really wants to back this thing without some caveats, conditions. Where do we stand right now?
Yeah, I think that's a good way to put it with it's a stretch to call it support. So we stand just about where we've stood for the past few months. And that's to say that the General Assembly still needs to approve a plan to start implementation of this redistricting effort. But we're not going to get there for a while. Like you said, there are too many lawmakers on both sides who want a clear plan spelled out in ink with an exact cost structure broken down by each phase. As of last night, the Wilmington Education Improvement Commission had a $7.5 million tab, but that's just an estimate. And most importantly, it also didn't lay out how to get that money, which gave a lot of legislators anxiety. Now WEAC will continue operating with a couple hundred thousand dollars to use to come up with a more detailed plan over the next year, but we don't have any sort of reporting deadline. WEAC can keep suspending redistricting efforts until 2018 under current law, and that could always be changed in a future bill.
And in fairness to lawmakers, this is not unlike the problem WEAC's redistricting plan found when it was before the State Board of Education. The State Board just did not want to sign off on something that they considered vague. In that case, they were able to get the governor to come in and broker a deal that kind of pushed all the responsibility onto WEAC. In this case, there was no deal really to be brokered.
And I can't necessarily blame someone for not wanting to sign their name to, a plan without actual concrete costs or how you're even going to pay for it.
It's very interesting. It's going to be something we'll be watching for the next year or so. At least the party line on this has been from Governor Markell, Representative Charles Potter, WEAC Chair Tony Allen. Something is better than nothing. But how likely is it now we're going to wind up going through this same type of thing again next year? And that at that point of the year, as you mentioned, there's a timetable here. It's a year closer to falling completely apart.
Right. It depends on what WEAC brings back to the table. So lawmakers are always finicky when it comes to funding, and the options the commission has laid out in the past aren't popular at all. And those include statewide property reassessment or letting school districts hike property taxes without a referendum for operating costs. And it seems like there's going to have to be some cost sharing going on, not just when students move from Christina to Red Clay, but statewide, since rural districts want extra funding to help teach their low-income students and English language learners as well. And if they come back with another blank check proposal, that's not going to fly.
I'm wondering if this at some point is going to wind up leading to just a larger discussion about school funding.
It absolutely is. I mean, you hear Republicans talk about that all the time. Democrats as well, including, people who voted against this. They say, we're not adequately funding our schools as it is. Let's talk about that instead of just Wilmington education.
Of course, it all comes down to the bottom line, the budget. Let's talk about that for a little bit. Somehow, after all, a lot of sky is falling pronouncements, there was more money for grant and aid than a year ago, $500 million for the bond bill. How did that happen?
It's all in how the administration and the General Assembly characterizes the situation. So to be fair, they had seen what looked like a much rosier situation last December with the revenue report, about an extra $50 million after factoring in a few ongoing bills that they have to pay. So they call things cuts that aren't actually cuts, but just choosing not to fund new programs that Governor Markell included in his proposed budget. What actually is concerning, though, is how much Medicaid and state employee health care costs are going up with little being done to stem that growth.
And that is really the issue, I guess, going forward. This is a pretty gloomy budget outlook going into these next couple years based on the latest DFACT numbers we saw earlier this month.
Right. The latest forecast has revenues declining by about $15 million next year just on its face. So we're obviously a year out from a final projection, but it's not great news. And Medicaid and state employee health benefits, those costs aren't gently going up. It's not like a small curve. They're going up pretty steeply. And we're talking tens of millions of dollars at least. And the problem is just exponential as time goes on. So whether that means the General Assembly has to adopt Markell's proposed health care plan for new workers remains to be seen, but one side is going to have to budge to keep that fund solvent.
And that's not even factoring in the possibility that we saw with the court ruling on Escheat.
Right.
This week, that there could be even more money disappearing here.
Yeah, and I asked the governor about that. He sidestepped a few questions about that, as did Finance Secretary Tom Cook. Right now they say that next year should be good, or I guess the current fiscal year. It is July 1st now.
Exactly.
But as for 2018, you know, we have no idea what that court ruling might mean in
and
the future.
Another thing to keep an eye on is next year starts for the fiscal year. Let's talk a little bit about Governor Jack Markell. And he didn't lay out a whole lot of new programs or spending in this year's budget and his State of the State this year, the final ones of his two terms. What did he wind up getting, and what kind of fell by the wayside for him in that last go-round?
Spending-wise, probably the biggest thing Markell got was $9 million in an increase to early childhood education programs. JFC, Joint Finance Committee, cut that by about $2 million to balance the budget, but he did get the lion's share of his recommendation. He also got a salary increase for state employees, lawmakers increased that to 1.5% instead of just 1%. As for budget-wise, JFC took a pretty big red pen to his spending plan. Some addiction treatment initiatives didn't get funded, nor did several education programs like increased internet bandwidth for public schools. And as far as legislative accomplishments, he's been touting the multi-million dollar tax break for DuPont that Leghall rolled out in January and earlier in the session to get DuPont to headquarter two of the three businesses there if they should merge with Dow. And you've got a bill that allows felons to begin voting after they served all probation and parole requirements, but while they're still paying off fines or restitution.
As part of his kind of criminal justice reform package, which is another thing he's been kind of touting here in these last few months, that he feels like he's got a lot of those things done, maybe a little bit more previous, but that one's like kind of the last of those ones that he'll have a chance to push.
Yeah, that's one of them. And like you mentioned, a lot of those juvenile reform efforts actually got done last year,
right,
for the most part.
What else got done this year? Were there some things that you could call signature accomplishments for this particular group of lawmakers in this General Assembly?
I think things haven't been as flashy as they have been in past years, but you could definitely count the continuation of the Women in the Workplace bills that just got signed yesterday by Markell among top achievements. Those include things like anti-wage secrecy, anti-discrimination measures when it comes to reproductive choices or caregiving obligations. They also stopped automatically shackling juvenile defendants while they're in a courtroom unless they could be unruly. Another that I know you're interested in are new concussion protocols, mm-hmm, applying to club and community youth sport leagues. And that's going to force coaches to take kids out of games if they suspect they might have a concussion, just like school leagues. But we're going to have to see how that one shapes up as time goes on.
It's interesting. It seems like, and I guess part of this is because it's an election year, part of it's just maybe because there's been so many of these big issues like WEAC and the budget, that a lot of the other stuff is just kind of these like incremental things, which are good. There's nothing wrong with those kind of type of incremental changes, but there was not a lot of those kind of like big. We saw some talk about minimum wage and,
right,
you know, marijuana,
right,
and things like that. But a death penalty obviously was tried again this year, but none of those really got any traction.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, like you said, everything was kind of either piecemeal or just smaller things that incrementally add up to a lot of content.
Let's talk about things other than WEAC that didn't get done. What were maybe some of the things that maybe they would get done but just never got across the finish line?
Well, one of the big ones that comes to mind is Senator Karen Peterson's equal protection constitutional amendment, which would have added in Delaware's anti-discrimination code to the Constitution itself, including things like age, race, sex, sexual orientation, and gender identity, which are really part of why it got stalled in the first place. Another significant piece would be the Clean Water Initiative, though that wasn't as surprising because no bill was actually introduced. But I would expect to see that back next year.
At some point, someone's going to tackle it because as we keep hearing, the concept of improving Delaware's waterways has broad support. How to get there, how to, of course, fund it is where the hang-up is.
Right, especially since the proposal by Democrats is to tack on a little bit of an extra flat fee for the personal income tax.
So any of what we saw happen this year, expected to be campaign fodder during this election season?
You obviously had Senator Colombianini saying he's going to support legal marijuana if he's governor. It's not going to be as big of a deal in terms of getting him votes, but it's certainly differentiating him from what you're going to hear from John Carney or Lacey Lafferty. As for negative campaign attack ads, Republicans are almost certain to use the extension of a background check waiting period against Democrats. And what that means is if your background check doesn't quickly clear the federal system, firearm dealer has to wait 25 days before they could sell you that gun. That's
that's probably the biggest one. We're going to see a lot of that gun control situation in terms of issuing across the country, and that will probably be the flashpoint for it here. When we get to the next General Assembly gaveling in January, likely to be obviously a pretty different landscape. Clearly, a new governor is a big change. Also, some changes in the roster at Legislative Hall as well. How radically different can we expect the General Assembly to look and feel come January?
Just my gut feeling is that it's going to be pretty different. Like you mentioned, if Congressman Carney wins the gubernatorial seat, as most people expect him to, we have no idea what his platform is. And that team has done zero campaigning in the roughly year that he's announced he's running for governor. Their website doesn't even have an issues page, so we're not clear on what a Carney administration would actually look like. Carney is generally thought of as more moderate than Markell on some issues, so that would be something to watch out for. I would say. And if Republicans do upset Democrats in that race, things would be drastically different, obviously. Legislatively, the GOP is trying to pick up more seats, which could tip the balance of power some more, depending on if it's in the House or the Senate. And with Senator Peterson retiring, the Senate has lost one of its strongest progressive voices. Obviously, someone with equal convictions could replace her, but we haven't seen anyone file for that seat yet.
And we could see another progressive voice in Brian Townsend disappear as well if he winds up being elected to the U.S. House.
That's absolutely true. Or maybe Tony DeLuca's running. Who knows?
going back to John Carney for a moment, I guess the other thing you could try to look at is his record as lieutenant governor under Ruth Ann Miner, but things have changed so drastically since then. I can't imagine you could really even draw any comparisons there.
Right, he's been out of state politics for 8 years, so it's very tough to kind of take that and extrapolate it into what it might look like in 2017.